Hello everybody, welcome back to
Taste Buddies!
Well done, well done. So for this episode, I've chosen the topic of food costs because literally it is all over the social media. It's a very, very hot topic right now.
Yes, it is.
With a lot of restaurants and players in the F&B adjusting their prices either publicly or
ninja mode.
Like when you put it, ninja mode. So actually, why is this happening? I mean, from my own experience, I don't say it publicly, but since the start of COVID, the supply chain has been in a roller coaster mode. I remember when the lockdown first happened, right? My suppliers were stuck with too much beef, too much everything.
Yeah, because a lot of restaurants were closed, hotels were closed.
Tourists cannot come in.
Yeah. Actually, hotels, they take the most, you know, in terms of supply from our suppliers.
Yeah.
So when they were not able to function, our suppliers had a lot of surplus.
Mm. Yep. So I mean, I've got friends in Australia with lamb and beef that they couldn't export also, right? So they were literally cheaper than vegetables. I mean, and I'm not even joking.
Really?
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, so for our Malaysian side, a lot of producers, they try to project or at that time project what's going to happen. They were unsure of the future, so they reduce their production. So now we're definitely feeling it, right? In my restaurant, I don't even have lamb supply that I used to have. All my ducks are gone. All my beef are gone. Big chunk of it are gone, and the prices are shooting up like crazy.
And a lot of times people don't understand why that effect takes such a long time.
It takes a long time to happen.
Right? Because the moment they stop producing or they stop rearing cows or chicken or whatever else, right? It takes months to build back the infrastructure to get the ball rolling again. Right? It's not like we are talking about machines here where you just kind of
instantly
just,
you can make how many you want.
You need to make X amount of chicken, so the next amount of chicken you can make another Y amount of chicken. Yeah.
It's like, hey, no one's buying our cows. I think next year we don't raise so many cows.
Exactly. And I think there was so much uncertainty in the first year.
Yeah.
And who knew?
Yeah,
right. That was gonna take 2 years long.
I think it became a really hot topic when you know the big boys are running out of stuff, like you know McDonald's running out of fries.
Yes, and then but they say limited. Instead of large fries, you can buy
more. Now it's still happening,
And then KFC no chicken.
Yeah.
that's how
McDonald's when they reduce it to medium, right now they are saying, hey, look, some locations don't have fries. You take either a sundae or a pie. And then, of course, KFC running out of chicken. That's the only thing you sell.
Yeah, that's
but
crazy.
But it's not your fault, though.
Yeah,
right?
It's definitely not. Mm. Yeah. Okay, I think just to point out the few factors that are causing this, right, from our experience and from my opinion, it might not be true, but I think one is the disruption in supply. Two, I think there are new forces in the market, right?
Mm-hmm.
Delivery platform taking a chunk of the percentage of the sales. I think that one is definitely affecting a lot of F&B players. Because what used to be a savior for us, where we just work with them to break even, right? Now has become something that we have to live with and try to make profit on top of that.
Mm.
Because if I continue to do break even business, I might as well go fishing.
What's the point, right?
Yeah. It's one of those tricky issues, and a lot of third parties jumping in also, from influencers suddenly become very important because they tend to affect online sales platforms like Shopee's and all that, like all these online sell platform, right? And then I think there's also recently, I think you all know, there's a shortage of workforce. That one was a big one, I think, or from my experience, I don't know about you, a lot of my workers started telling me, boss, the factory offered me higher.
Well, it is not good for businesses, it's great for employees.
Mm. And the latest one, lagi sakit kepala lah, you all thought like, okay, counting, really, like, I survived all this. Now, global, what they call geopolitical tensions.
Yeah,
right?
So we're talking about Ukraine,
The reason why this affects us so much, right, is because all these economic sanctions that they are doing.
So one of the biggest potential negative outcome of this is that I believe Russia and Ukraine produces 30% of the world's supply of wheat.
Yes.
Right, and they have this window where they have to plant next season's production.
Yep.
And because they're in war, they are not doing it. So which means next year, somewhere in January. Right,
you see the flour prices.
The prices of flour, anything that's wheat related, would see an increase in price because 30% of the world supply has just gone.
Okay, I think the topic is very, very heavy, but let's start with something lighter.
Yeah.
Right. So since we all roughly gonna have to ikat perut soon, I've challenged these two buddies here to come up with a dish that costs less than 10 ringgit. Then after we cook it, we're gonna guess how much did they spend on it?
Can I ask, what does it mean by how much does it cost? What about my own labor? If I spend 2 hours making this and I charge myself 50 ringgit per hour.
Very high.
They want belakang kira. They want belakang kira.
So we're talking about what it's called, food cost.
Yes, what we mean by food cost, yeah. Okay. Like the cost of your grocery.
Things that we buy directly from a supplier or from the supermarket at this point. Yeah. Okay, so I think, what is everyone making?
Yeah. Can we start with you?
Yeah, sure. Since I'm the burger guy, I decided to make a Ramly burger. Mm. Like, no frills is exactly how you will find it on the street. And then we're going to try to explore how much does a Ramly burger actually cost to make. Mm. And how much are they selling right now?
For me, I will try and make a truffle pasta. I want to try and reverse engineer truffle pasta and see how bad it is if it's under 10 ringgit.
Okay.
In fact, I'm already ngam 10 ringgit and see how much truffle we can get.
Only truffle oil, put like 3 drops on. That's all you can afford with 10.
And Jun?
I am making a muachi. You know, taking a different route is all these like mochi aunties selling by the roadside. It's like compared to like a sit-down restaurant, right? Like how do they operate? Like is what they're charging, is that survivable for them? Is that sustainable?
Actually, I haven't had mochi in a while. How much do they charge?
Wait, I might be a bit quailo here, but what is mochi? Is the sticky rice with the peanut?
Yeah, so mochi is like a mochi, but like the Chinese version. You know, like roadside, they will have like a big sticky dough, like glutinous rice dough, and then they will like cut it out.
And then roll it
in peanut crumb. Yeah.
Okay. Interesting.
Okay, so we have dessert, we have appetizer. All right, that works. All right, so should I get cooking?
Yep.
Yeah.
All right, so these are the ingredients that's needed to make this Ramly burger. I'm missing an egg as a display because I already used all my eggs. I use onion because one of the Ramly burger I used to like to go to, they will add onions into it. I thought it was a very nice touch, so good onions. Worcestershire sauce is you have to have it lah. And then Ajinomoto black pepper. And then this Maggi seasoning, this is where all the flavor comes from. I tried making without this before.
It just doesn't
taste like it. Then the next secret ingredient is planta. Planta is like, it's a must have. And it's everywhere. From making the egg, to the patty, to the toasting the bun. It's everything that makes this Ramly burger. Chili sauce, I use Kimball. It was the easiest one I could find. I know they use another mayo on the streets now. They call it Nelly.
Oh yeah, the cheaper one, cheaper than Mayo Magic.
Yeah, so this is actually Lady's Choice.
Just go the cheapest of everything.
But it's still considered cheap-ish.
Yeah.
The buns here, unfortunately I couldn't get the Ramly one, so I bought from Village Grocer itself, but it's close enough lah. So the bun has been toasted, everything has been cooked to how I understand the Ramly burger works. So we're gonna cut it in half and I'll have the two of you try. And then you guys can try or guess how much it costs to make this burger.
Wait, but Ramly burger got use Worcestershire sauce?
Got.
Yes.
Got. Some got.
Not this brand, right?
So the beauty
is... This brand?
So the beauty of Ramly burger is it really depends on what they want to use.
Everyone
has their own secret touch.
But you don't use a lot, like you just like cheat a bit.
Yeah, I think out of everything, right, this is the most expensive one.
I don't know how Renyi is going to calculate the cost. 1 milligram of Worcester sauce.
I kind of winged it a little bit.
Oh, I got steam.
Oh la la.
Wow, it really has that dodgy pink color of the Ramly. Yeah.
Okay.
Do you know why Ramly burger is so pink?
I don't dare to say that. I don't know the ingredient. But normally if you smoke meat or marinate meat, right, there's a thing called pink salt.
Yeah.
It's basically a nitrate to preserve the meat color.
So the meat, good with planta, and then heavy seasoning of...
Anyway, heavy seasoning. Wow. Thank you.
So I went all out. So personally, I wouldn't put so much sauce in my burger, but I understand that for Ramly, you need that. I didn't even add cabbage this time, because generally, I also don't like cabbage in my Ramly burger. So I opted out of it.
How many eggs is this?
Two eggs, because it's too patty.
Okay.
So this is what they would call a double special tambah cheese.
Tambah bawang.
No, but bawang, this is a specialty of the store. Let's consider it that way. Can pass or not, at least.
Pass.
If I open the store, y'all would buy or not.
Pass.
Actually, I would say, right, it's actually quite special that this is so specific to the Malaysian taste bud, right? That when you eat it, right, it's straight away it hits those...
The right tick box, right? This is what it should taste like.
Yeah, yeah.
So back in the days, we were challenged by our customers to say, hey, look, make an atas ramli burger. Mm. And no matter how we tried to make it atas, like instead of plantain, we use butter. Yeah. Instead of this, we use other form of umami.
Yeah.
It just doesn't
taste
like
it. Because the signature taste of the ramli burger is all these like ingredients.
I can tell you, it's just,
cheap.
It's just two.
Yeah,
it's not even about cheap
or
not. It's not even about cheap. It's a very specific flavor profile. I can't explain.
Right,
this two combination just works.
Crazy. Crazy good. Do you want to talk about the cost now?
Alright, so all the ingredients are in front of you. You guys kind of know how much all this costs. I've kind of broken it down into how much ingredient I've used. I didn't measure down to the grams, but since I'm already in the business, I kind of know estimate how much it would be. So let's go with this burger without the cheese first. So the usual that you order is called a double special, daging double special.
Okay.
So it's beef, two patties, wrapped with egg, and then the usual sauces.
Okay.
How much do you think it is?
Food cost, right?
Food cost.
Wait, this one got cheese or not?
This one got cheese, but
okay.
Let's talk about no cheese first.
No
how much
cheese.
Would you expect it to be?
Ramli patty, how much? Each one.
So this is a 70 gram patty, just FYI, 70 gram patty.
I don't know because I don't know the price of the patty.
Yeah, I don't know the price of the patty. Patty is the most expensive one.
Five, cannot be.
I think it's...
This will be 1 ringgit, everything lah. I would
380.
Say... 380. Okay, I was going for 4.
4 ringgit.
Yeah.
4 ringgit, yeah? Do you know how much it sell for, this burger?
Double special. I think it was what? 8? 7?
7.50 to 8.
Yeah.
Let's go with the high price of 8 lah. Right? Ramly burger prices do vary. Some, for the sake of competition, they will charge lower. Alright, so 2 Ramly burger patty, as of yesterday, alright, is 2 ringgit. It used to be
each
around,
one is 2.
Sorry,
each
I'm giving
one,
the
right?
total price, yes.
Uh-huh.
It used to be 5 ringgit 50 cents for 6 pieces.
Mm.
Now it's 6 ringgit for 6 pieces.
Mm.
So each one of it is 1 ringgit.
Mm. Okay, okay.
So there's 2 ringgit inside.
2 ringgit a patty.
Okay. The buns, I bought this a bit expensive, but I know outside you can get it for about 60 cents.
Mm.
Okay. The plantain, mayo, chili sauce, all this, all in all, right? The amount of that they put is quite significant. It's close to 150.
Mm.
Okay.
For one bun.
For one. I mean,
sorry.
I'm talking about sauces.
Oh, sauces, sorry.
Yeah, plantain. Mayo, chili sauce, 150.
150.
Egg.
There's 2 eggs over there. Each egg is about
60 cents.
You can get 40 cents eggs, but
that's a small one.
Yeah, that's a small one. Yeah. So if they use the bigger egg, it's close to 55 cents.
Mm.
So that's 1 ringgit and 10 cents plus.
Okay.
Lettuce, if they use lettuce, it's about 40 cents. Okay. Onions, I put 20 cents only lah. Okay. Total, 5 ringgit and 90 cents. No cheese,
No cheese.
And this is latest price, and I didn't take supermarket price. To be fair, I did not take supermarket price.
Yeah.
I took what I would have been able to buy from my
supplier price.
Yes. So 5 ringgit and 90 cents.
Oh la la.
I believe this used to be 20-30% cheaper in the last couple of months. But these are latest
prices. Prices.
And they sell at 8 ringgit, so they make about less than 2 ringgit and 10 cents per burger.
That's gross profit.
Yes.
Yeah, haven't include manpower, everything. Like, this is just food cost
so,
and the gross.
Assuming, you know, not much work needs to be done other than chopping onion. But the guy also have to stand there the whole day.
Yeah,
every hour that he stands there, if he's not standing there, he has to hire someone to stand there.
Yeah.
Market rate, like we talk about, Burger Lab pay very, people complain Burger Lab pay very cheap. Okay, I pay 7.50 per hour with other bonuses in place.
Yeah.
I think Starbucks is close to 7 ringgit these days, but prior to this was 6.50. KFC, all those are still within that 5-6 ringgit range, right? So how much would one pay to own a store, to run a store per hour? How much would you pay yourself if you're running the store per hour? So that also needs to be considered, right? So again, we are not talking about that. We're just talking about food cost today. So just food cost, 5.90. If you add your potential labor costs, let's say some makcik there is making their own special sambal, this and that, it can potentially go up to 6.50 even. So what I've heard on the street is that depending on who you're buying from, depending on where they're getting supply from, there's no, for Ramly Burgers, right, it's quite unique. They don't have a go-to place. They one day they go to NSK, one day they go to a Ramly specialty store. They get wherever is cheapest. If they're unlucky, they get something that's a little bit expensive that day, they earn up to a minimum of 50 cents to a ringgit per burger.
Whoa, heavy bro.
That's what speaking to the Abang Burger, that's what I've learned so far. Okay? Now, if with cheese, a little bit different. With cheese, because there's a premium to it, they earn a little bit more. So with cheese, 2 sizes of cheese, I give it about 1 ringgit, 1 ringgit and 10 cents lah. Okay? And this is the cheap cheese, yeah?
Yeah.
Total becomes 7 ringgit, and then they sell at 10 ringgit, so it's 3 ringgit profit. gross profit if you remove the cost price only. If you remove labor and everything, probably earn 150-ish.
Wow, but still there's nothing, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, this one is one of the heaviest heavy topic that we will talk about, like, is like whether we are underappreciating our hawkers out there.
Well, I think first.
Later.
All right.
That was very heavy.
Let me clean up this.
Let's do the food pump first. Yeah.
Okay. So I've made a truffle pasta.
I'm
trying to aim for under 10 ringgit, and we'll see how much truffle is that.
How many grams does it say there? 5 grams. So little. Five grams of cheese. Yeah.
5 grams. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Let's not waste. This, I need you to weigh, how many is it? 10 gram weight.
Okay, so this is 10 already.
Yeah.
1.8. Okay.
6.9.
9.8.
Okay.
What is this?
This is a truffle slice.
Oh, this is truffle.
10, perfect.
Yeah, so that's 70% of the food cost. That's 70%.
Alright, you guys see this? You guys see this?
Go all out. Alright, let's go. Alright.
Okay. Let me clear this away. Yeah, there's mushroom here, let's not waste it. Okay, we want our money's worth.
Be good at breaking onsen egg.
You do it.
Yeah. Can't be that hard.
Whoa! Whoa!
Oh.
Make a nest. Give it a nest.
Get a nest.
You could have charged 30 ringgit for this. Now it's
a nest.
So I'm going to do the egg porn like so.
No.
It's good, just mix it.
Yeah.
Oh.
Okay. I smell it. I smell a bit of truffle.
Actually, I think for 10 ringgit is value, I think.
Damn value.
Not bad, 10. No, this food cost though. People not gonna sell this at 10 ringgit.
Okay, go ahead, guys. Alright.
Oh, yeah. Black pepper though.
Do you want black pepper?
Yeah, still your black pepper a bit.
Hey, 10 ringgit ah.
10 ringgit. 10 ringgit and 5 cent. 10 ringgit and 5 cent. There you go, boys.
Don't say 10 ringgit cannot get luxury.
This is not 10 ringgit lah.
It is. It's on 10 ringgit. Nom.
Good. Need a bit of Maggi seasoning.
Exactly. So I chose this dish because people always ask me, right, why is pasta so expensive at Western restaurant?
Right.
And I'll tell you why. Because most of the umami comes from high value, high quality product, but it looks very small. Like things like truffle, like parmesan cheese, like olive oil, like good black pepper and good pasta. Those things look very simple, but then the actual cost is very high. Like for example, I tell you just now, this is the amount of truffle I put in my restaurant, right?
For one dish?
For one dish, which is 30 gram, right? And the cost of it is 20 ringgit. So the cost of my pasta, just the truffle alone already 20 ringgit, right? But for me, the value proposition is you can get a budget version of it very effectively and still get a nice meal, even though it's very simple. Yeah.
But even if you're talking about budget version of it, there was a lot of constraint. And eating this, I know it's not 100% you.
Yeah.
It's still, you can inject more flavor. This is a good creamy pasta. This is a good truffle pasta. I say it's 80%
that. 80%.
Alright.
So if you put all this and you whack the parmesan cheese, you pay me 40 ringgit, counting already.
If this is 10 ringgit, you should be charging this at close to 30 ringgit.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
And if it costs you 20 ringgit to make the other portion work, it should be 60 ringgit already.
Yeah.
Okay, but let's not go into too deep on that later.
Yeah. I'll talk about more of it later. Oh, now for dessert.
Okay, so I made
muachi. Walao, muachi.
I can't believe you never had it before.
No, I just don't know. I don't call it muachi.
What do you call it?
You go pasar malam, you see also.
Rarely now, right? Go on.
Yeah. So essentially, it's a dough made of glutinous rice flour, and then there's usually a peanut crumb But because I 10 ringgit, right, so I made like hazelnut instead of peanut.
Okay, but I don't see how this can be very expensive.
So what they usually do is like they will cut in front of you. So let's do that today.
Okay.
You can pour the crumb. Or sometimes they don't
pour
the
crumb. Peanut and sugar, right?
Yeah, usually peanut hazelnut. Sugar, but this one is hazelnut, no? Hazelnut sugar. Yeah.
Winner, lo.
Okay, and then usually they have the dough. Usually the dough a bit flatter, but mine is a bit more rough, lah.
Oh, roll it first, then cut.
You can, usually they can cut, and then they roll in each one to save like cost or whatnot. So they don't give you so much peanut, lah, but you know, today.
Today we go all out, lah.
Yeah, so can do, lah.
No, is this portion 10 ringgit? Under 10 ringgit? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, this portion is under 10 ringgit. Under 10. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, so then they can make a lot of money. This one can sell like, I don't know, 6-7 portions?
So usually I just, you know, to make it easier.
And scalable also.
And not so sticky also. Another just pour everything. And then, you can just
you
cut it long.
Chopper thingy.
And actually you can also make it in a microwave, this one.
Oh.
Yeah.
This one, this one, the margin show them higher.
You see, you'll find out.
But the nuts are expensive though. Mm-hmm. His one hazelnut, with peanut, can still in the go.
It's still there.
No, he has so much room for adjustment that he went for hazelnut.
Yeah. I was like, hazelnut made the cost go up by like
three times.
Compared to like peanut.
Peanut, right?
Nowadays, peanuts don't cost peanuts, so.
Oh, that's the line.
Maybe it doesn't look as nice as like, you know, your roadside auntie selling one.
Oh, I go in first already, sorry.
Okay.
Eat it,
as per usual.
Not enough peanut.
It is good, man. Like, very good.
It's so good.
Yeah, it's so good.
Okay, so we can talk about food costs. So, I mean, I don't have the ingredients, sorry. But in the dough itself, is glutinous rice flour, sugar, salt and water. And a bit of oil, okay? So the main thing is the glutinous rice flour. But even so, in here, a portion enough to feed like, it's a dessert for like three people, we still got leftover, right? 1 ringgit only. 1 ringgit for glutinous rice flour. And then the sugar inside is like 10 cent.
Yeah, are we supposed to guess first?
Oh yeah, okay. Yeah. Oh, I forgot! Okay, guess the whole thing, guess the whole thing. I give you already glutinous rice flour.
I think...
So this portion, so everything that you were chopping
up there? Yes, everything. Okay.
6 ringgit.
Wait. Oh, you need a cost. Is this pure hazelnut? Just no peanut, no nothing?
Yes.
More than that, bro. 8 ringgit.
So essentially the dough itself is now, the whole big piece, it's like one ringgit
plus.
1 ringgit, 10 cent, something like that. But here's the main thing. Yeah. The hazelnut itself, one bag of hazelnut, 500 grams, went to a big event and get it. It's like 30 ringgit. Yeah. 30 ringgit for one bag of hazelnut. So that makes it, right, the amount that I use in here, it was about like 7 ringgit.
Yeah.
So you're trying to hit the 10 ringgit
one. Yeah. So, but if I use just regular peanuts, I can get peanuts from the supermarket, the price was like 7 ringgit for 500 grams, same thing as well. So it will be like a quarter of the price.
Dude, you have to sell this.
If this is
your secret, your own secret recipe and olive oil accidental. This is so delicious.
So if you go with hazelnuts, this one, the cost price, the total will come up to like 8.30 around there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What if it's peanuts?
If it's peanuts, it's just gonna be minus 5 ringgit. 2-3 ringgit. Yeah.
Damn.
If it's peanuts,
the hazelnut makes a lot of difference.
It's like eating warm marshmallow. Go to the peanuts.
Thanks. Hey, you guys like it?
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, for everyone that... Do you provide this recipe anyway?
I'm so sorry you guys can't taste this.
God, I got it. I can share the recipe if you need. Just let me know, I can share your recipe. You can make it in a microwave, you know. That's the beauty of it.
Making it fresh is unlike anything I've had from, you know, store-bought.
Yeah. And the generous nuts is definitely make a lot of difference.
I'm a sweet and salty guy. This really speaks to my heart.
Yeah.
Then we can move on to our big discussion.
Yeah. Okay guys, so now we've had all three dishes and wow, that was very satisfying. So Renis, just to recap, how much was yours cost? Double
7 ringgit. Double special with cheese.
Double special with cheese.
7 ringgit.
7 ringgit cost price, right?
Food cost.
Food cost, yeah, just the food cost only. For me, my truffle pasta, I maxed it out at 10 ringgit, right? And then
June, say no more than 10, technically you broke the rule.
Put a little bit black pepper, 10 ringgit 5 cent, okay?
And June, you're
mine,
watching?
It was like 8:30 for, well, it served like 2 to 3 people now.
Yeah.
I think more than 2 to 3 people. Yeah. I think 6 of us, I think everyone had enough. But damn, that was really good.
Yeah, that was really
good. But I would have imagined that to have cost.
I think for our viewers, make that at home.
Yeah, make that at home.
It's definitely worth your effort.
I mean, Ramly Burger and pasta at home.
I mean, the
dessert was special today. Yeah.
Recipes will be at the end of the. It will be on the at the link, right?
Yeah.
Link, it's link of the recipe.
Okay.
Let's talk about how is food costing done for restaurants and all these other merchants, right? So I think if I can just roughly ask you, like Rennie, like what is your rule of thumb when you do food costing?
All right. So when we first started 10 years ago, the advice is stick to 30%. Mm. All right. If this thing costs you ringgit to make, so this thing costs you ringgit to make, sell it at ringgit.
Mm. Okay.
That's the rule. However, when we first started, we were breaking some new grounds in the market, in the burger market, and selling a burger at above 10 ringgit, just the burger alone, was kind of unheard of. Mm. So we didn't dare, because if we followed the 30% rule, our cheeseburger at that point in time, we would have to sell at 15 ringgit. Nowadays, not a big deal, but back then, anything above 10 ringgit for a cheeseburger, nothing else, cheese, lettuce, sauce, patty, right, and buns. If we were to sell at 15, nobody would have bought it. Mm. We charged 10 ringgit and 50 cents for our first cheeseburger, which was considered high back then. Yeah. So we basically did a 5 ringgit and 50 cents markup at that point. But later on, I think actually up until today, let's not say today, up until 2019, just before COVID, we have always followed a 10 ringgit markup rule, because we kind of positioned ourselves as fast food, and we wanted to compete with the likes of Carl's Jr. and McDonald's. So we always say, okay, we cannot be too far away from them. We can just be a little bit more expensive. And that little bit more expensive always ends up around 10 ringgit more of our cost. So if it costs me 10 ringgit to make a burger, I'll sell it at 20 ringgit.
Right.
But if I follow the 30% rule, which everyone should be following, I would have to sell it at 30 ringgit.
So in the beginning, what was your percentage then? It was like
50%. It was 50%. But thankfully, because we went viral back then, we had volumes. So again, as a new business owner, what I wasn't seeing was that, oh my God, we were making money. You know, even 50K profit back then was like such a high number for us. This day, 50K for us, it's not that it's not a high number, but it's like a, hey, look, we are teetering on break even, right? If the next month don't do well, then we're suddenly not making money. But the point here is that back then, we had such high volume, we were blinded by the fact that we were charging too little, right? Because the moment the trend died, right, then we saw, oh my God, we were spiraling down. Our profitability immediately reduced. Because we needed the volume to sustain. We needed to sell thousands and thousands of burgers to even break even.
Yep.
But we were selling, you know, 3-4 times above break even mark last time because of being viral.
Yeah.
But the moment you are not viral, you can cut that in half.
Yeah. When I started as well in the F&B world, I was actually told by most of the financial people would say the safe percentage of food cost, right? The cost of material, the things we buy, they say the safe number is 25%. And for me, I tried to do all the math and it's just not possible.
Yep.
I tried to do the math. I sell chicken rice. I sell like a basic sandwiches, hot dogs, simple stuff. Whenever I times four, the price become a bit unacceptable for myself, lah. But by that, because at the time I've got no experience, I only saw everything from the perspective of a customer.
I think that's what makes you and I very similar because we are always thinking as a customer, will I be willing to pay that? And that's where we stop ourselves from being businessmen.
Like for example, like just now the pasta you made, right? 10 ringgit, right? Then you sell at 14.
Exactly. So in order to explain this to you guys, right? The advice that I got from, again, the financial people, like my accountants and people who have run restaurants before, I mean, 25%, I would say, like in first world countries, is possible, right? But for Malaysia, they are saying the average is about 33%. So let's say you buy Apple for 1 ringgit, you probably sell it at 3 ringgit. And how people come up with, how they come up with this figure is like this. So what they do is they take all the fixed overheads, basically all the fixed expenses that a restaurant need to pay for, Alright? Doesn't matter whether you do well or you don't do well, these are all fixed costs, right? And I'll go through the list with you, right? And this is a very conservative list, right? And Renyi and Jun, you can see through here, and these are actually very, very low numbers. So even that is damn crazy already. Yeah.
So okay. I think the definition of fixed cost means that it's there all the time.
Yeah.
For example, rental,
yeah.
Electric. You can't run away too much from it. But I know your list goes into details. So let's do that.
I give you an example, right? So let's say rental is 5,000, right? Staff cost is 30,000. Maybe you have like 10 staff, right? Okay, for a restaurant. And then electricity, 3,000 is very conservative. My electricity bill is about 7,000.
Yeah, same.
Okay, 3,000, let's go down the list. Telephone bill, 400, that's also very low. Water, 50, that's also very low. Restaurant supplies, things like, your wok go missing or your worker damage, your plate break and everything. Restaurant supply, 200 is too low. I spend about 1,000 every month. Kitchen supplies, like I said just now, all your kitchen towel, all the tissue, everything like salt, all the containers your worker throw into rubbish bin, you have to pay for that lah. Let's say another 200.
I don't think you need to go with numbers because your numbers here are all shits.
Yeah,
this is all too
that's
low.
Why I said it was gonna annoy you, but I'm just listing down the things that we have to think about.
Yeah.
And these are not even all.
Yeah.
All right.
Pest
and
control.
Then I go down pest control 220 to chip. Then blah blah bing bang boom. Bank charges, if you've got bank loans, you have to pay interest, all right? And these are the ones listed by this accountant. And for me, this is delusional. This is too simple.
Let's talk about in the last 2 years, what are the new expenses that we have
exactly.
to pay? Masks, gloves, sanitizers, right?
Yep.
And these are all part of the new fixed costs.
Yep. So let's say we add all those sum up. So the total expenses is about, let's say, 40 to 50,000.
Yeah.
Fixed cost for a small size, 10-man restaurant. That's already 40,000
per month.
Per month, right? So including your food purchases and everything, right? So you need to have at least 70,000 to 80,000 cash spent, just being there.
Yeah.
So the restaurant is paying that money.
So it's a rolling.
Yeah, hand, just right? being
cash
there.
Roll, yeah.
So what this accountant is saying, okay, based on your expenses, let's say your fixed expenses is let's say 40,000, right? How you calculate your target sales is that 40,000 is 70% of your sales, right? Assuming that your food cost is 30%, right? Basically, he's saying in order to break even, just in order to exist, right? Yeah, your 40,000 is basically 70% of your
sales. So let's say, just to make math simpler, right? You have 30,000 in food costs.
Yeah.
Okay, meaning you buy all your ingredients and whatnot, 30,000, and then you have 70,000 in fixed costs, which means that month you need to make at least 100k in sales.
Yeah.
Just to break even. Okay?
Yeah. Even make money.
Yes.
Yes. If you break
100k
down,
sounds like a lot.
Yeah.
But 100k
but
to pay other people.
100k is going out. So you need 100k to come in.
Yes.
Yeah.
But here's the other crazy thing. Can I just throw in the delivery equation into this?
Exactly my point.
Okay. So let's say you have 100k sales. For most restaurants, right? 100k, not bad already. Right? You're like, okay, you're making it. Right? Anything more than that, you are a decent business, right? And if you say, hey, look, I have 100k sales this month, sounds good to most businesses because a lot of restaurants are teetering on 60-70k. Right?
Exactly.
So you have 100k sales, but let's say 50% of that sales, okay, which is 50,000, comes from GrabFood. Now, or FoodPanda or whatever else not, okay? They all charge around the same. Let's be conservative and say 20%.
It's quite conservative,
okay? Let's put 20% because the new players, like Shopee Food, Maybank Food, they charge really, really low.
Yes, yes.
So let's meet in the middle, 20%.
Yeah, 20%.
So out of that 50K of sales that I got, that I sold from customer gave me money, 10K, right, will go to these delivery partners. So I'm basically making a loss already at this moment.
Ayo.
That's where the difficult part comes in. And this is with food cost being 30%.
30%.
But of course, there's a lot of other model at play here. But what we're trying to say is that running a restaurant is not as easy as a lot of people think because we all romanticize it. I ended up here because back then I was like, oh, it'd be so nice to have a nice little burger joint, hang out with my friends after work, have a bit of beer, have a bit of a burger. Mm. Oh my god, it's turning into a nightmare that I can't stop.
Yeah, this is why I don't run a restaurant, guys. Don't ask me.
But I think, okay, just to recap, because I think there's a lot of numbers being thrown around, just for our viewers' sake, right? The magic number here is the cost of your food should be under 30 or 30-ish percent.
Should be lah.
That should be.
Yeah. That's the dream.
That's a magic figure.
But here's the thing. Why can't we do it? Why can't you and I do it? Is it because we are not good at our numbers and hence, or we are not good at sourcing cheaper items so that we can meet that 30%? Or are we dictated by market forces to say that, hey, my competition also sell around this price. I cannot sell more than that. Are we dictated by that?
Yeah, it's like in the beginning, you're like, someone told you that
30%?
It should be 30%,
yeah.
Right?
I should be charging 15%, but I 15 ringgit, but I can't, or I feel like I can't. Yeah. Because I'm like, hey, McDonald's, you can get a burger, a cheeseburger at 5 ringgit.
Six, 7
ringgit, right?
So it's a bit of like, you know, like you said, the market forces, like if you were to charge 15 bucks for a burger back then, very few people would actually buy it.
Right? I don't think we would have gone viral as we did.
So I think for our viewers, the way that you should think, right? So let's say you go into a burger shop and the burger price is 15 ringgit. And if you're wondering whether this burger is expensive, ask yourself, can you make the burger for 5 ringgit? Right? That's one way to gauge the pricing margin of a restaurant. So we're giving you this magic number and you can now take this ruler and measure all the restaurants that you want.
I mean, the Ramly Burger was a very good example.
Yeah.
Right? Just now it was a double special. So two eggs, two patties, and then just sauces. Nothing overly complicated about it.
Yeah.
Six ringgit and 50 cents average to make that burger.
Yeah. Mm.
And we're not even talking about top tier ingredients. Yeah. Not to say these are bad ingredients, but you and I know, you know, what we consider these ingredients to be, you know, in terms of quality.
And when you talk about Ramly Burger, their fixed cost is very different also, right? Mm. Because they're not in a restaurant, like physical location, they don't have to pay like rental, it's a lot lower. So that's why it's like, when you compare the prices that you buy it at, like at a sit-down restaurant, like Burger Lab, or even like McDonald's, it's gonna be more expensive than the Ramly Burger.
Yeah.
But even that also, I mean, just out of curiosity, right, this morning I went to buy a nasi lemak and a char kway teow, right? You can see the image here. I deconstructed the char kway teow, basically took out all the siham, took out all the prawn, took out all the tauge and weigh and calculated the cost, okay? So the cost of the char kway teow was about 320 cent to 350 cent, right? 350 ringgit to be said.
Oh, as in like if you took 30%?
No. This is weighing the ingredients. So I calculated their cost.
Oh, okay.
It cost the auntie 3 ringgit 50 cent food cost to make the hotel, and she is selling it to me at 7 ringgit 50.
Okay.
That's very near 50% food cost.
Mm. 45 to be exact. Yeah.
45 to be exact. And you know, after deducting her rental, her work time, you know, all these things, the loss and damages and everything, actually for me, if you ask me, all these hawkers, they are doing us a favor. Trust me, they are doing us a favor. We should actually just say thank you.
So again, if you imagine, see, char kway teow, nasi lemak is like 350, and then let's say their overheads, their fixed costs, everything is another 250, 3 ringgit. So each.
Well, that depends. Yeah. That really depends.
Mm.
Because let's say a hawker stall rental, 1 month, how much is it these days? 500? 1,000?
No, 1,000.
1,000 for one stall,
One stall, right? It was offered 1,000.
So 1,000 ringgit, so we do a quick math lah. How many char kway teow are you confident to sell in a day?
I don't know. I need to ask char kway teow auntie.
Actually, that's very hard to gauge.
Yeah, right? Depending on where you
because
are.
That makes a difference. Because if, let's say, it's 1,000 ringgit a month, you divide it by 1,000 plate, okay?
Mm.
Which means each of it, your rental is 1 ringgit lah. Right? It's part of the equation. Of course, if you sell more, it becomes cheaper. Because it's fixed cost, you can't run away from it.
Yes.
So the problem here is, if you are, let's say your char kway teow not nice lah, nobody can help you. You only sell 10 plates a day.
Mm-hmm.
Then you're definitely making a loss already.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a break-even point, and you need to factor in to say, how many can I sell in a day? How many can I physically sell in a day as well? Mm. Because there's a limitation. Your wok can only cook so much at a time. Mm. You have to spend 5 minutes cooking it.
Mm.
There's only so many hours a day in the time that you can sell. So that makes a whole lot of difference. That's a limitation.
But I calculated, right, she needs to sell 44 plate of char kway teow a day just to break even.
Okay.
So you imagine the first 44 plate char kway teow she sell is just to be there, just to exist only.
Mm.
Only after that, then they make profit. Even that, if you say one plate, they earn 2-3 ringgit, that's very hard. Yeah.
I can use the Ramly Burger as an example. I've spoken to them as well. So as you can see, they earn about, let's say 2 ringgit, like, let's be generous, let's not talk about you know, minus this and that, for 2 ringgit. In a night, a typical one, non-famous kind of Ramly Burger store, they'll be lucky to do 50. Okay?
50 ringgit.
Well, 50 burgers. Right?
Yeah.
The more popular ones can be 200 to even 600 burgers. Yes. But it's no longer one man show.
Yeah, yeah,
no, they need like a few few people on location already. But all in all, the take home on in a night is not that much. It's a few hundred ringgit only.
Yes. Yeah. It's literally guys pagi makan pagi, guys petang makan petang. Right. So now that you guys know, right, the margins for hawkers are very, very extreme. It's literally like very, very dependent on whether you can hit that target. If you don't hit that target today, you memang kena this month. Yeah. So you can see all these hawkers, right? It's not an easy job. Definitely not an easy job. It's hard labor for very little pay. Right? So my plea to all the viewers out there, right, is seriously, the hawkers are doing us a favor, right? So moving on with the topic, right? So I myself as a restaurateur moved on in terms of pricing, right? Because business is very complicated when we have to make a profit. There are a few pricing strategies that I've learned along the way, and it will help to explain why certain products are so cheap and then why certain products are so expensive, right? So I'll give you the way that this thing I learned from YouTube, actually, right? This is how restaurateurs rate their products. So in my restaurant, there will be what I call a star menu item, right? So this star menu item is high profit and very popular. So it means there are certain items in my menu which is high margin and there's a lot of people who order it. And these are the gold mines that I look for. And then you need to have your plow horse, right? This thing we call plow horse is because it's low profit, but it's very popular. Means that even though I don't make a lot of money from it, but because there's a lot of people ordering it, so you can allow for less profit because you get the volume, right? And then there's another one which you call the dog, right? The dog is where I've made a mistake. This thing, that la low profit and nobody order also. So this thing is literally costing me money just to put it on the menu, right? But sometimes we do it because, you know, we want to make noise or whatever, like you do something weird and crazy, okay? And then the last thing is called the puzzle. And this thing is technically what I do as a high profit item, but it didn't get the popular vote from the customer. So there are very different, you can actually analyze a menu and then you will see different types of behavior based on the pricing, right?
And actually then, this is like a graph thing, right? It's like it's the same as the BCG, like matrix, like a consulting, they use it in consulting. Like you can show the graphics if you guys can find.
Yeah.
Yeah, over home space.
I actually think of it like a football team or any sports team. I imagine it that way. You will always have your Ronaldo. He's very expensive but very effective, right? But you cannot add. Not everyone. I mean, not everyone can be Ronaldo. Yeah, can you imagine if there's 11 Ronaldo in your team? Your team will definitely lose, right? You will need a goalkeeper. You will need a defender. You need all these things which are stable.
Yeah.
So the lesson that I've learned from running restaurants, right, and to survive, right, is I always make sure my plow horse is very strong, right? Although I may not make a lot of money from it, I know for sure day in, day out, people will order that and that will pay my bills. So even in my worst situation, right, I'm still feeding people and I'm still paying salary, right? Renyi, what about you? Do you have a pricing strategy that you want to share? But before that, I do remember, right, when I first worked with Renyi, right, his strategy was in order to make I don't know about him. I don't know why, but from the way I observe how he does business is he wants to democratize, how do you say, food. In a sense that he wants everyone to have the good shit, right? So his strategy for me, my observation was get the volume and then get the buying power, get the price. I don't know, was that the plan?
Well, that worked for us in the early years.
Early years.
Of course, we didn't understand what we were going through at that point. Of course, hindsight 2020. For us, we still go by that 10 ringgit rule, but we have increased to 12 ringgit for some burgers.
Are you saying that you have a fixed margin for all types of products?
So what I've learned is that it doesn't always have to be percentage. At least it's a dollar margin.
Dollar margin.
Whatever I sell, I slap a 10 ringgit or 12 ringgit on top of it.
Mm. Yeah.
But over the last few months, actually in the post-pandemic world, that became really difficult because the cost of the goods was shooting up very quickly.
Yeah.
Right. And here's the crazy thing. A lot of people congratulated us that, Burger Lab, I see you during pandemic, do really well, this and that, and we survived. I mean, the cost at the time was still slowly creeping up, but it wasn't like drastic. And we had volume because everyone was stuck at home, people were ordering on delivery. But the moment September 2021 happened, which is restaurants were allowed to dine in again, we saw a huge sharp drop in our sales. But at the same time, we saw cost of goods rise tremendously. So much to the fact that November, December, January, we made huge loss, more than we've did in the last 2 years of staying open during the pandemic. And that's how crazy it got for us. And that's when in February, we made an announcement that we're going to have a 10 to 20% increase in price in our product.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was what happened to us. Our pricing strategy is not the best. I think a lot of people say I open business for fun more than for making money. We were very, very consumer centric, and I think that became a bit of a crux for us.
Yeah. But at the same time, I also heard that, you know, in the beginning, because your food cost was like 40-50%, right?
Yeah.
That made it very hard for other people to start like burger businesses, so like, and come into the same space as you, the same market, and be your competition, right? Because they had to, when they look at your finances, they're like, oh shit, 40-50%, that's like super high.
Well, they could always opt for lower grade ingredients, and some do.
Yeah, but yeah, that also gave you, do you feel like that also gave you a bit of a buffer as to like the competition?
I don't know. It's a good point that you made there.
I actually would say yes. In fact, that was the foundation of how Grub survived, because we never had money to compete with all the larger steakhouses with interior design and whatever, plates and whatever. Everything is secondhand, everything. But so the way I priced it is what I learned from Burger Lab. Like there's a fixed margin. So that gave me a very competitive edge. And to be honest with you, even though it was very, very painful, it really put us on the map.
You know what this idiot did? His first menu, he asked me to have a look at it. Right?
Yeah.
And I think most people in the early days, I remember Grub, right, saw the menu and go like, that's cheap. Uh-huh. His original menu was cheaper. I was like, how are you making money off this? You need to increase price. But even then, look, again, hindsight, I think it was still ridiculously cheap. But I think it played to your favor that, you know, people were like, oh my God, this is really the cheap food and good quality and as well.
Yeah, yeah.
But he wasn't happy. He wasn't making money.
Yeah.
The thing is, he wasn't making money.
F. Yeah.
But his comparison was that, hey, prior to this, I'm losing money. Now, I'm not making much money. That's an improvement, right?
Don't be like us.
So I think that benchmark is very important to know anything below the benchmark is bad, and whatever that we do should always be compared above benchmark and not compared to your worst.
I think it's like the takeaway from this discussion is for F&B players, right? Know that it is an arsenal or weapon that you can use in order to compete, but you have to know that it comes with that cost, right? You will suffer, your business will suffer. And it might not be an immediate effect, because when the euphoria of opening restaurant, your first 6 months or 1 year,
just because you're new,
a lot of people come, so you think like, oh, I've made it.
this in this period,
honeymoon period.
Honeymoon, I mean, in this current timeline that we're in, where influencers play such a big role to hype up new restaurants.
Yes.
I've seen restaurants that, you know, because of KL Foodie or whoever that posted about them, gets really busy, but 3 months down the road, right, suddenly it just becomes...
It's dead.
It's dead. I'm like, holy shit.
Yeah.
And it moves so fast.
It moves very fast.
I've been there before, but luckily our euphoria stage was like, it lasted 2 years.
Mm.
But back then very different times, right?
Now
and
like
we were able to adjust to it. But imagine you open business and you buy all the new ingredients or you hire more people because you're like, oh my God, we're so busy. Yeah. And 3 months, 6 months down the road, you're like, where the heck is all the crowd? And I have all this fixed cost that I've now incurred.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So basically, underpricing may be effective in the early stages, but know the cost and also know the effect on your business later on.
Mm.
It might not be that as sustainable as you want it to be. Like in the long run, I think it's better to have a long-term strategy rather than have a...
Well, it's not about a long-term strategy. The way I see it is review the business strategy every 6 months to a year even, because especially in these current times, it's constantly changing. Mm. Let me share an extra fact for you guys. So since we were talking about, you know, where the slice of the pies go, right?
Mm.
Imagine you're in a mall. Do you guys know that in a mall, we pay a certain percentage to the mall as well?
Ooh. But what is that percentage?
Your sales, right?
Yes.
It's in the rental contract.
It's in the contract, right? So let's say the rental is 20,000, okay?
Mm.
Then there is something called GTO, okay? And the GTO percentage is, for big malls, let's say Pavilion, Mid Valley and whatnot, it's about 15%.
What does GTO stand for?
I forgot. What's the
But basically, it's a percentage
that you pay.
It's a profit share.
A percentage of your sales.
So if, and you will always be above one. So the terms is very simple. let's say for this lot here is 20k, and for 20k, right, it's a very small lot, maybe 1,000 plus square feet. Mm. Okay, I know of restaurants that paid 100 over k in rental, but let's say 20k rental for this lot. If your sales, right, 15% of your sales is above that, you pay the higher one.
Yeah, you pay that.
So the better you do, the more you share your profit.
It's like a tax bracket.
So it's a tax. Thing. That's correct, right? But think about this. So there's already a 15% that goes to the malls. Now, have you noticed that some of these mall businesses, some of these restaurants in malls also have quite a substantial delivery order?
Mm.
So 15% goes to the mall, and then another 20-30% goes to the Grab.
Goes to the
or delivery riders.
Delivery, platform.
delivery platforms. Like, they're not making money, guys. They are not.
Even if they do, it's a very painful process. Like, damn painful. You pay every biscuit, everyone.
So there are people who is negotiating different contracts moving forward, whereby if it's delivery sales, you pay a lower GTO. Because my sales is not generated from
right,
you.
Right, right.
I mean, I can see why malls charge that. It's very simple. Because in a mall, they bring in people, they do the marketing, they do the promotion, and the whole mall is full of people, and there's a certain conversion rather than we being in a shop lot and then we hope for customers to come over.
Right?
So there is that, but the economics is changing. But I can't imagine. I only have one business in the mall. It's in my town. They've been great. They are open to discussion to, hey, look, delivery sales, we can cut it out and then we do a slower percentage. That's great, but I don't think every mall is doing that. But here's the other thing. A lot of people think, I'm going to share this because a lot of people think, oh, opening a mall is such a great thing.
Show win.
It's not.
It's hard.
And staffing, next level problem. People are constantly hopping around different restaurants.
Because the next employee is just next door.
Yeah.
I keep getting this perception, right, that we are all, Malaysians are often guilty of this, right? We are often guilty of this. Every time I go to a coffee shop, right, the uncle will say, our street food, very cheap one. Wow, but lately increased 20 cents. Wow, like very, like we have this perception that we need to tell everyone, tell the tourists and tell, society in general, things that food needs to be cheap. I mean, is that selling ourselves short? How do you feel about this issue? Right?
I think it's like, we have, like you said, we have the perception that our hawker food is often cheaper than if you go to eat at like, what we often call like Western food or all these sit-down restaurants where you get table service and all that. But when we expect like a plate of char kway teow, chicken rice to be super cheap, that also puts a lot of pressure on all these hawkers, right? It's like, we cannot sell it at a higher price. Although we are not really earning a lot, like this is how we're talking about, like they just earn like 2-3 ringgit a plate, right? That's all we can earn, right? And if you love their food so much, right, moving forward, is this how much they're going to earn like for the next five years, 10 years?
No, I think we're very hypocritical. We are like, you know what? We believe that we should earn better. We should all have a right to a certain lifestyle, right? We should at least make 2,000-3,000 ringgit per month, minimum lah, right? Yeah.
But the char kway teow auntie at the store there? No, I want the char kway teow to stay at 7-8 bucks.
Yes.
Well, so exactly. Then generous though, like people still talking about 4-5 ringgit.
But then occasionally they'll make the remark of, oh, I saw that uncle there, chicken rice
driving Mercedes. Bench, right?
Those are the anomalies. There will be some that finds extra success, right? But there are some that don't, and the majority don't.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I think just as a sharing experience, it's like, Yes, you can become very wealthy from doing food and food business. That's when I think it's a combination of skill, luck, and also determination, right? So once you hit that volume, right, you may be wealthy. And also it has a lot to do from my own experience, my journey in F&B, from my observation, it also has a lot to do with strategy. Like, for example, people who aim for food that are scalable and designed to be efficient in production tend to have that chances better. So for example, I give you an example. If you serve a burger the way Renny does, right, fucking have everything cooked to order, right? Grill to order, bread to order, toast to order, make to order, everything. Then you need like a team of 20 people just to serve you that one burger. Compared to if the burger already pre-cooked already. In fact, the burger kao team already put mayo, not only put veggie lah, cause it will go damage, right? Now you put veggie, just wrap it there, put it there. Then it's a totally different game. So you can't, there are so many factors that affect how successful or how difficult a business model is, right? It's like so many things needs to be taken into consideration. You can't just say like, oh, I saw the other guy, you know, driving Mercedes or whatever. It's like, it's just a simple tweet here and there. It's a totally different game, ball game already. Even though it might be the same genre.
I think at the end of the day, for me, if you want to eat in that restaurant, and if the food is good, if the service is decent, and the pricing is within what you can afford, then pay.
Yes.
And of course, if you also think that the boss treats the staff right, and you know, not just the boss become rich, but then the staff, you know, are treated like slave, you know, support, right? I think every restaurant, every hawker have the right to charge whatever they want. Zero complaints. If you don't like it, if you can't afford it, then don't go. It's fine. I think it should be that way. But because we are also very skewed to wanting to compare, hey, that char kway teow and this char kway teow, how come this is more expensive, right? But we not all char kway teow hawkers buy from the same supplier.
Yep.
Not all have the same deal as well, right? Maybe his brother is the kway teow factory maker, right?
Yeah.
Or he has some links to get cheaper prawns, right?
Yeah.
So it's all different. I think everyone out here is to make an honest living, right? And if you feel that it is deserving, go back, continue buying. If you don't feel it's deserving, move on. If the food is not good and you can get a better product elsewhere for cheaper, go the other side and help and support those. That, I think then that is true economics at work, right? Those that are not good and overpriced will slowly phase out. Those that are good and is at the right price point will slowly find success. But it shouldn't be everyone racing to the bottom, trying to undercut one another, trying to serve cheaper. Yeah. I open a char kway teow next door to a famous one and serve 50 cents cheaper, and hopefully, you know, people will come over. I don't think that works.
I think definitely, at least I can see a glimmer of hope. I mean, there are a lot of young food influencers, right, who are much more enlightened than the previous generation. So they have very good knowledge about the quality of food, I mean, about the culture of food. It's not as simple as always going for the cheaper stuff, right? Sometimes it's about history and stories and, you know, passing on knowledge to the next generation. But going along the lines of making a good living from the F&B scene, so you have to understand the price that you pay will also reflect on the F&B as a career choice for all our young people. I mean, I don't know about Renyi, but I'm sure he has his experience. From my observation, the dropout rate from F&B is so high, it's unbelievable, right? It's like we got a lot of young people who just graduated from culinary school. They come in, work for 3 months, 6 months, and then they drop out. And then, you know, for me, I can see we are having a talent shortage.
Brain drain in the F&B industry, for sure.
Very serious brain drain in the F&B, right? Even if the talented ones that I know run away to Singapore or on a cruise, right? They rather work on a cruise to Switzerland, you know. Why suffer here, you know? So, I mean, just to educate the viewers, the price that you pay will affect this as well, you know. If we really want to have a serious, continuous growth in our F&B culture, I think something has to change. Our mindset has to change, I think. So there's a bunch of Q&A that you guys have sent for us, and we'll try our best to answer those questions.
Yeah, so we see quite a few questions, but I think they come under a few categories, right? This one you kind of touched on already, on delivery apps. So Siu asked, when you call for app deliveries, right, how much is the delivery company earning? So, because they're comparing like, okay, if I see the same food selling at like $6.50 from the restaurant, but then on the delivery app itself, how come some places will increase the price to like $9? Does that all go to the delivery company, or yeah, is the restaurant trying to earn more maybe?
Okay. Yeah. So I think I can give an overview here. Delivery players or platforms charge between 15% to 35%. Depending on how big they are or how popular they are, okay. But like I said, most merchants will fall in between that 25% range that they pay to the delivery partners. So what that means is 10 ringgit, I sell to you this chocolate at 10 ringgit, 2 ringgit and 50 cents will go to the
delivery
company.
Yep.
Okay, now. With delivery companies, different companies have different rules. Alright? Some will say you can price of whatever you want. Some will say you cannot price more than X percentage. Mm. Some will say you cannot change price. And with different rules, they will offer different percentage packages to the merchants, to the restaurants. So if, let's say this is 10 ringgit in the store, I charge 15 ringgit on the platform, 25% of that 15 ringgit still goes to them. However, as a restaurant, I take less damage. Okay, so that's how it works. All right, now, a lot of questions also ask, why is it that you cannot just price whatever you want? Now, this is a very tricky one because I think the delivery platform wants this to be on their advantage. If you as a consumer can get the same price in store and on delivery, which one would you buy?
Delivery.
You do delivery.
Easy.
Right? Because it's convenient and whatnot. But if the restaurant says, hey, look, I'm going to give 25% to this delivery platform, I'm going to charge that 25% to the customer. And I think that should be the way. All right? So this is 10 ringgit, but this is 12.50. The customers will make a conscious choice to say, I'm going to go to the restaurant. So then delivery platforms will be at a disadvantage. So they don't want to put themselves in that position. So that's the economics
that's the economics of it.
Okay. Second question from Jemson 96. Is it Jemson? Is it our Jemson? It's asking, are drinks the highest profit margin in restaurants? And how so? But also as a second question, wow, I got two questions, so greedy. How do you decide when to increase the price of your food? Is it annually? And how do you go about, like, what is the measurement by that? Okay, first one, drinks.
I think depending on your pricing strategy, drinks can be the most high profit margin or can be the lowest one. So for example, in my case, our drinks definitely is not our priority. So we definitely on purpose underprice our drinks. So I only make maybe 1 ringgit to 50 cents on one drink. That's because our tickets are very big. So if a customer comes in and he's already spent like 150 ringgit on his steak, so I find it very hard to ask him to spend another 10 ringgit on drinks. So I'll just charge maybe 3 to 4 ringgit.
Wrong, man.
Yeah.
You go to any other steak joint, they charge hundreds of dollars. A can of Coke is 10 ringgit.
But it's my strategy. In fact, you know, we have things like free corkage and everything. So it's a conscious decision to lose money. But then again, for me, I see it as a marketing cost. Yeah,
all right. You know? But at any other restaurant, well, most other restaurants outside of Grub, the drinks you earn a lot, especially if you sell alcohol. Like, I've worked at a couple of restaurants before and the alcohol margins are often like really high. It can be like 50-60%. And they earn, all they have to do is like, you know, pour a bottle. Like if you want, you can do like table service and whatnot. But essentially, it's just you buy the ingredient and then you just
sell it. From what I heard, they sell 10 drinks, 10 servings. They can buy a whole full bottle already.
Bro, I'm itching to ask.
Yes.
How much margin do you think Starbucks make? All these coffee joints, not just Starbucks. You know, like, let's say their drinks, 21 ringgit nowadays, right? Like coffee, right?
So I don't dare say what it is now. Yeah. But back then, I used to work in Starbucks as a partner. So from my understanding, I remember my manager told me this. So I'll make one venti frappuccino, and then we'll split it into, I think, 12, 14 cups. We go outside and we do sampling. He said, as long as you can get one person to buy, right? Then we make back the money already for that sample.
So you mean you make one venti but you split it?
Yeah.
As long as you get one customer to buy it back, then
we cover the cost already.
So about 50%.
About 50%. But then what I've seen so far is that the moment we serve, at least 2% will come and buy. So the conversion is actually very, very high. And donuts as well. Their donuts is insane. Because I've seen the cost of the donuts. It's about 80 cent, 90 cent. Back then, this is about 10 years ago. But they'll sell at around 460 to... Now, I think nowadays it's like 7 ringgit already.
Okay, your price increase. Quick one. How do you go about increasing your prices?
We increase as a last resort. Right? I don't know why I have this fear of increasing price.
Because you care too much about the customer.
I mean, we do, but I don't want to sound as if, like, you know, that's a... We're so grand and whatnot, right? But at the end of the day, for me, I always fear a negative reaction. So we don't do it as often as we should. It should be every year reviewed. Because over the year, you will get memos from different suppliers on different ingredients that there will be that 5-10% increment. So at the end of the year, with whether you're paying, you know, you're staffing. So your staff salary increment will definitely happen, at least 10%, right? And then your rental will confirm go up as well, right? So everything is going up, and if you don't change your price, then you'll be at a loss. Yeah. So for us, we try to do it every once, every 1.5 years, I would say. But most restaurants, I think, every 6 months, every 1 year, they should review it.
Yeah. So for me, my old strategy was we have a formula for averages. So we will try and average out our profit margin, so it's always the same. So whatever the price fluctuation, it will be covered by some items, like I said, the stars, which are high profit and high order. Some is a medium profit, less order, and whatever. There's an average that we try to hit. But from this past 2-3 years, that has totally gone out of the window. Because the fluctuation is so great now, if I don't react fast enough, even my my workhorse, right, the plow horse, which is less or medium profit but high orders, those really hit me back. So right now I observe the price like I observe my Bitcoin chart. Right? So every shipment of beef that comes into my store, my worker will tell me, boss, this is the price, do the calculation, and we set the price. So at first we get a lot of flack from customers, so they are saying like, are you cheating us?
Yeah. Last week, this price, go up, go down,
what's happening? Then I think after a while, they also realize the market is like that now. The beef market is like that now. It's either, I think some other steakhouses, what they do is they put in a hefty margin to cover the fluctuation.
Yeah.
Whereas I try to follow the fluctuation.
For one store business, you can do that.
For multiple stores, it might be so difficult.
But my advice just now was for, you know, normal times, but currently we review our price almost
it's
every month.
It's crazy, right? It's,
I'm
very scared. In fact, I'm having cold sweat now.
Yeah, you guys are so stressful here, but we'll end with one final bonus question. A few of you actually asked about zap fan. So Susu and Eric the Ng asked, what's the general guide for zap fan pricing, right? Because I know a lot of you guys, you go to zap fan store, you buy the same thing, but then everything is different price.
Same person can get the two different person can get exactly the same thing, but get different pricing.
Yeah.
Right?
So what's the way to game it?
Okay. So this is what I heard from my Chinese friends who have friends and who are friends of friends of friends of people who do zafan. They say, you see, right, there are maybe what 60 dishes, right, in a zafan store. There are 60 dishes. They don't calculate every single item and see like let's say chicken, I buy at this price, how much profit margin is this, how much profit margin. They took the lump sum figure of all the raw material they buy, they put a margin on that, and then they create a sales target. So they calculate the sales target. Like, so let's say, for example, the entire lot of the grocery cost them 100 ringgit. So he already said, okay, 100 ringgit, then my profit margin is, my food cost should be 30%, then my target sales is 300 ringgit today. So he, for the first few plates of hitting those target, they are very careful, right? So they'll be like very serious, you know, charge you like very expensive and everything. So if you are the guy who come after he hit his target already, then that's when the buffet come. Yeah, that's when they see like, better sell cheap to this guy than throw away, right? So if you come late a bit, then cheap lah. That's why, so you go different time, suddenly, so expensive, suddenly so cheap. That's why, that's what I hear.
But I mean, that makes for a good story. I'm not sure if it's entirely true. But I know they do try to get rid of, you know, at the end it is cheaper because they just want to get rid of the stock. But I mean, you can't explain if, you know, I queue up and you queue up just like, you know, three guys behind me.
Three guys behind? That one, I don't know lah.
I think, right, whatever it is, the long-term game, right, is kindness. You be kind to your zhafan auntie.
Hey, auntie, looking so good today.
Then you'll get cheaper over time. It's a long-term game, right?
No. It is true. When I make friends with them, it is cheaper overall. Yeah.
Is it? I think I find that they like me because I tend to finish up their leftovers.
So they're like, I never buy chafa at the end of the day. I find it really gross.
Oh, I like it because it's cheap.
All right, with that, shall we wrap up?
Okay, sorry for the damn long episode. I mean, if you guys are pressing your calculators, if you want to start your own F&B journey, don't be too scared. Do your homework, write it down, press the calculator, and you'll be safe. Just remember that one magic figure. If you have to remember one thing from this episode, food costs below 33%. That's all you need to do, and you'll be safe. All right? Ciao.
Adios.